Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Neuro Experience Podcast. I'm Louisa. I'm the host. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Brad Stanfield. He is a medical doctor practicing in New Zealand, and he focuses a lot on longevity. You've probably seen him on YouTube. He has an amazing YouTube, and today he's going to be speaking to us about the clinical human evidence there is for living a longer life. Since this space is absolutely rampant with misguidance and misconceptions, Brad and I first open up and talk about what is longevity, because I think that's a really important thing to understand. What is it? And what does the current evidence state as it relates to living a longer life? We then move into, of course, some of the misconceptions in the space. We're then going to be speaking about the top three nutrients that you should be taking for longevity and why. And we talk about this from a general population perspective. This is not just for elite people. We go into skin aging, and for people who are listening, who have been avid followers of the podcast, you would know that I actually haven't delved into this topic before. Skin aging, we're going to discuss what it is, and then we're going to hone in on three specific supplements that have been shown in the human clinical data to help with healthy aging skin. So I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, feel free to go through and give us a 5-star rating on Apple iTunes. This is the best way to enter today's sponsor. Today's sponsor is Element, and I'll tell you why. When you start listening to this episode, Brad is going to be speaking to you about skin health. And when it comes to healthy aging skin, we can do many things that damage it. Number one is the sun, UV rays. So we need to be wearing sunscreen. But number two, hydration. So many of us are walking around dehydrated and you don't even know it. In fact, dehydration, just a mere 2% of dehydration can cause a 30% decrease in your cognitive performance. So a lot of us, me including, maybe you just don't like drinking water. And that's like me. So I drink Element. It's an electrolyte drink, and it actually has 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium, and none of the junk. So I have been having around 3 packets of electrolytes per day, specifically these Element packets. One, because I go to the gym and I sweat, so I want to replenish that. Two, no matter if you're sweating, you still need to be replenishing with electrolytes. So, and the third one I'm having at night because they have this awesome chocolate one, which tastes like a hot chocolate without the added junk and calories. But guys, don't take this lightly. You really need to be hydrating for both your skin, your brain, and your body. And Element is the best place to do that. So if you want to try this out, they've got amazing different flavors. Like I said, the chocolate one is my favorite. You can go to element.com/neuro. And what they're doing is they're giving my community a free box. So literally, if you don't like it, you can, I don't know, go and give it to a friend. It's a guaranteed. So go through, check it out. I like the chocolate melody right now. element.com/neuro. And it's completely risk-free. A very special thank you to our second sponsor, which is Timeline Nutrition. I especially love this particular product because I'm doing everything I can to optimize my overall health. But one of the things that I know I need to be optimizing so I don't get sick and so I can live a longer, more healthier life is optimizing my mitochondria. The mitochondria are the energy generating components in our body, and they become damaged, making it harder to produce energy. So this is why it's extremely important to optimize your mitochondria. I do this in many ways, and one of the best ways that I do this is by having MitoPure, which is the product from Timeline Nutrition. And MitoPure is really important because it has something in it called urolithin A, and it's non-GMO, it's gluten-free. Most of the products over at Timeline Nutrition are non-GMO and gluten-free. But when I take this little packet, it comes in a little packet, this MitoPure, it's a berry flavor. I mix it with my morning smoothie and it tastes amazing. And this compound, urolithin A, is probably the majority of why most people are getting it, why it's so popular. Urolithin A is actually a probiotic and it's clinically been shown to energize cells, increase muscle strength, and improve endurance. And guys, this is just the beginning because new studies are continuously exploring and proving the incredible potential of urolithin A. So we need to be ingesting urolithin A. And the way to get it is through this MitoPure powder. It tastes amazing. It tastes like pomegranate and it tastes like berries. And all you have to do is either mix it with water or you can mix it with vanilla protein powder. So if you want to try this out and you want to get 10% off your order, head on over to timelinenutrition.com/neuro. That is timelinenutrition.com/neuro. And use code NEURO at checkout and you'll get 10% off this amazing formula. Dr. Brad, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. I'm excited for our discussion.
I am too, for many reasons, but I always, you know, everybody knows this. I get so excited when I get to speak to somebody down under. Now, I know you're not in Australia, but why don't you tell us where you are?
Yeah, so I'm a practicing medical doctor here in New Zealand, Auckland. So I work in a semi-rural clinic and I also run a YouTube channel on the side to discuss the health and longevity research. So it keeps me pretty busy, but it's rewarding to have, you know, see patients face-to-face and help them face-to-face. But then also have the YouTube channel where, you know, in theory, I'm helping many people all at once. So it's quite nice to have that balance.
Yeah, and that's actually where I found you. You have an amazing YouTube channel, YouTube presence. I learned a lot from you in your, but I would call them bite size, if you will. Maybe there's around, you know, 10, 15 minutes. And your core focus is longevity. Why is that?
I think there's just so much miscommunication out there. So when I first started my channel, I wanted to have a resource where people could go to where, you know, I was focusing on what the human clinical research actually shows. Because what I was finding is that a lot of information online, they were focused on what the cell research would show or my starter would show. But it's we need to be careful not to extrapolate things too far. So there are a number of actionable things that we can do to extend our health span and lifespan that's based in the human clinical research. And so I just wanted to create a resource that people could actually go to find those strategies.
Yeah, the fact that you said clinical is a really big thing because when we talk about clinical, we're talking about humans. We're not talking about mice per se. And you and I are humans and everybody listening to this are too. So that's the exciting data that you're going to be talking about today. And I want to start with longevity and understanding what we really know. You know, many people now, if you had asked us 20, 30 years ago, hey, Brad, can we live to 100? Somebody probably would have laughed in your face. But now we know that you can quite possibly live to 100, maybe even 120 and beyond. So I guess I want to start by understanding what we currently know as it relates to longevity.
Yeah, so it's still a bit of an open question as to why we age. So there's the so-called 9 hallmarks of aging, which was recently extended to, I think, the 12 hallmarks of aging. So there's still a lot of research that needs to be done to fully understand why we age and what we can do to stop it. But while that research is undergoing, there's many things that we know now today that we can do to extend our health span and lifespan. And really it comes down, so if you try and ignore the headline grabbers, really it comes down to a foundation, right? So we want to make sure that we're having a good diet, regular exercise, high quality sleep, socializing, and a life purpose. And once you've got that foundation set, which many people don't, but once you've got that foundation set, then you can start to layer things on top. So there's certain supplements, there's certain skincare routines, and then there's certain preventative medicine strategies that we can use. And as you say, with all of that combined, there's a high likelihood that we can live to 100 years and above. So yeah, I think it's just about trying to get that message out there that there's many things people can be doing today to maximize their health span and lifespan and to wake up feeling energized and feeling good and ready to, you know, charge after the day.
You said that many people don't, and that baffles me. Maybe I'm just in that category that does do that. You know, I've always been on the bandwagon of we have to eat well, we have to sleep well, we have to get regular exercise. To me, it's like, doesn't everybody just know that? And doesn't everybody just do that?
I think a lot of people know that they probably should. But it's tricky, you know, when, say, patients that I see in the clinic, there are, you know, single mothers of three who are holding down two jobs, and they don't have the time to necessarily devote to their health. And you can see that it, you know, their health, unfortunately, takes a back seat. So when I see patients like that in the clinic, it's trying to find strategies that will work within their lifestyle. You know, even small things, like say if they're in between meetings, if they can do, you know, some gentle push-ups or sit-ups, or, you know, making sure that when they do have time to eat, that they're making healthy choices that are convenient for them. Because that's one of the big things, is that if we can try and avoid processed foods, and move more towards a whole food based diet, that in itself is a massive upgrade to our health. So yeah, I wish that all of the patients that I saw in the clinic were focusing on their diet, exercise, and sleep. But for some patients, it's just not an option. And in those cases, it's trying to make the best of a, you know, less than ideal situation.
Do you feel like it's because of their circumstances that maybe, you know, you said single mother, maybe their socioeconomic status, things like this, that are preventing them from doing these lifestyle factors? Because sometimes I believe that it may come down to education. You know, people just maybe, they just don't know that what good food is, what good nutrition is, what exercise to do, and how to sleep well.
I think there's an element of that. I think most people now, though, know that, you know, ideally we want to be getting in some exercise and we want to be eating well. But, you know, one of the misconceptions that I sometimes see in the clinic is some people think that all home-cooked meals are better than, say, some of the meals that you can buy out. And what they'll do is they'll buy prepackaged meals at from the supermarket that's loaded with sugar and salt. And if anything, it's probably worse than some of the meals that you can buy out. So there is an element of, of education that needs to happen. But I think mostly it's circumstances. People trying, it's making sure that, the lifestyle strategies that we're encouraging patients to do, that they can actually do them and that they've got the time to dedicate towards their health. And I think a lot of people overcomplicate diet and exercise. Really with exercise, it comes down to, you know, we want some cardio exercise and we want some resistance training exercise. And then again, it's trying to fit those broad strategies to someone's lifestyle. It's a similar thing with food. There's a lot of debate about which diet is best for longevity. And, you know, people go down, say, the low carb diets, people go into the, you know, vegan diets, high protein diets. Really, it's, we want to focus on that we are getting enough protein and that we are having a whole food diet. And then with sleep, again, it's trying to prioritize that sleep. But then, you know, if some of the lifestyle factors such as, you know, diet and exercise aren't there, often people start to put on weight. And then that affects their sleep quality as well. So many patients that I see in the clinic, they're waking up feeling tired, they've got morning headaches, and chances are they've got sleep apnea, which is where you've got periods of time overnight where you're literally not breathing. And that's terrible for your blood pressure, terrible for your oxygen levels, and it makes people feel fatigued. So if you're feeling fatigued during the day, then you're far less likely to, you know, go for that run or do that exercise, and it's just a negative spiral. So it's my job at the clinic to pick up on those things and try and reverse them. And again, it's about trying to make people feel energized and feeling good to be on planet Earth.
So everything you're speaking about sounds free. I call them these Mother Nature's gifts. We, you know, we don't really need to pay to sleep. You know, we can go out and get exercise. You don't necessarily need a gym membership per se. And eating well, obviously, that's not free. But look, it's it comes at a small cost. So why is it that this space of longevity is getting so much hype? And what are some of the misconceptions today as it relates to this space?
So I think it's important to wind back the clock and, you know, people have been trying to live forever for thousands of years, right? We had alchemists back in the day who were saying that they had the elixir of life. And there's always, you know, a new headline that comes on every few years to say that there's the new fountain of youth that's been discovered. So I think it's important to just bear in mind that when a new headline comes about, that certainly whatever strategy that they're trying to hype, it mustn't replace the foundations that we talked about. So I think that's one of the big misconceptions that I think Their headlines would lead you to believe that we're just on the cusp of finding ways to radically extend human lifespan, you know, past the theoretical 110 to 120 year limit. And I think we've got a lot of work to do to blow past those limits. What I think we do have is actionable strategies to make people live a healthy 100 year lifespan. And those are the things that I think are far more interesting at this point to talk about, because they are applicable to virtually everyone. And most of them, as you mentioned, are free. Now, yes, once you've got that baseline, there are some things that I'm sure we'll get into that can further improve our health and further improve our lifespan. But I think that's one of the big misconceptions. I don't think that we're close to radically, you know, extending lifespan to 150 or 160 years. And I think, yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to focus on is diet, exercise, and sleep, because those are the things that we can control today.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about diet then. And let's talk about some of the key nutrients that we should be ingesting daily or however many times that can help improve our quality of life. Because it's not just about living longer. We want to be able to live a good life and live longer. So what are some of the key nutrients that you believe that we should all be ingesting to increase our health span and our lifespan?
So one of the things that I think most people don't get enough of in their diet is protein. So there's been a lot of research looking at what would be the optimal protein intake. And this is assuming that you are doing some resistance training. So it seems that to maximize your benefit from that resistance exercise, we want to be aiming for about 1.6 grams of protein intake per kilogram of body weight per day. Now that's quite a lot. So say for an 80 kilogram person, that's about 120 to 130 grams of protein. And to put that into context, an average egg has got about 6 grams in it. So you'd be needing to eat a lot of eggs to reach that protein intake. And it's a similar thing with beef. So beef has got about, it's 25% protein. So you'd have to be having about, you know, almost half a kilogram of beef a day to reach those protein intakes. So I'm not saying that anyone should be eating that much beef or eggs. I'm just trying to give that as some context. So one of the things that I think people need to be prioritizing is that each meal, you want to be having some form of protein, be it eggs or lentils, chickpeas, nuts, seeds, fish, every meal that should have some protein in it. And if you're not reaching your protein intakes, then an easy way to try and top that up is via protein shakes. So, you know, every morning with my breakfast, I'll have a protein shake, and it's a similar thing after dinner. I'll also have a protein shake, and that's to make sure that I'm reaching those optimal intakes. So I think that's one of the big misconceptions at the moment. And I think one of the reasons for those misconceptions is that there's some mice studies that suggest that actually low protein intakes are associated with longer lifespan. But I think it's important to distinguish again that we are humans, and the observational human studies that we've got at the moment suggest that actually the higher protein intakes seem to be associated with longer lifespan, and in particular with muscle performance. So when we get a bit older, you know, our muscles, unless we do resistance exercise and unless we are having enough protein, our muscles just waste away. And that's one of the big reasons for frailty and loss of independence. So if we can make sure that people are getting enough protein and are doing resistance exercise, then that can significantly extend both our health span and our lifespan. So I think that's one of the big misconceptions. Then the rest of it is just making sure that people are getting having a wide and varied diet to make sure that they are reaching their micronutrient intakes, that's particularly from whole foods, because the whole foods generally are rich in fiber. And fiber overwhelmingly has been shown, as we increase our fiber intakes, we lower things like cholesterol. And also there's some very good observational studies showing that a higher fiber intake diet, again, are associated with longer lifespan. So overall, we want to get enough protein and we want to make sure that we're having a whole food diet. And once you've got those things established, and low sugar and low processed foods, once you've got those things established, then the vast majority of diet is taken care of.
So what if somebody's thinking, okay, how much protein? Are you on the 1.6 grams of protein per kilo of body weight?
Yeah, that's right. But I do want to clarify that that's generally lean body mass. So if someone is obese, that's not what the trials were done on. So the trials that I'm referring to, they were taking you know, athletic people who were exercising, and they wanted to see what would be the optimal protein intake for benefits from that resistance training that they were doing. So it wasn't looking at obese people. So that's something to clarify. But if someone is obese, you know, one of the best medications that we can actually use alongside diet and exercise is GLP-1 medication. So this is this has been a massive shift.
This is big right now.
Recently. Yeah, it's huge. And those medications I've been prescribing pretty liberally in the clinic and seeing some pretty awesome results. So overall, coming back to protein, it's generally based on lean body mass or the ideal target weight that someone should be.
But with the GLP-1, don't people run the risk of having an addiction to it? Like maybe if they don't get off it, not addiction per se, but maybe if they're on it and then they get off it, then they might gain all the weight back on?
Yeah, so that's what the trial research seems to suggest, that if patients are on this medication for 1 year, they lose weight and they feel great. And these medications work by significantly reducing your appetite and sugar cravings. But then, as you say, when patients go off this medication, generally the hunger hormones come back and most of the weight is regained. So when I prescribe this medication to patients, I suggest to them that actually it should be for life. It shouldn't just be for a short term fix. And it's interesting because, you know, say in the clinic, if I prescribe a blood pressure medication, right? So say if someone's doing what they can for their diet and exercise and sleep, and their blood pressure is still up, I'm going to prescribe them a blood pressure medication because I want to prevent heart attacks and strokes in the future. And generally, people have got no real issue with taking blood pressure medication, say, for the rest of their life. And it seems to be a bit different with GLP-1 medications. This, you know, obesity is a chronic disease, and now we've finally got a treatment to actually help patients. So there's no, we get a lot of benefits by being on this type of medication over the long term, because if we're reducing our weight and actually maintaining a healthy weight, we can reduce, you know, kidney disease, we can reduce heart disease, and by maintaining a healthy weight, we probably can reduce cancer rates as well. So there's a lot of advantages for being on this medication over the long term, and I don't think that should be a reason for patients not to be on this medication. Because again, there's many other medications that are for life, and GLP-1 is exactly the same.
Yeah, huge thing right now over here in the US. One thing that really caught my attention on your YouTube channel was an area that I haven't actually never touched on, but it's really fascinating to me. And it's the area of skin health and skin aging. And you kind of like woke me up to all of this. And I said to you, you know, as a woman, everybody, you know, I think that a lot of women in their 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond, and men too, are so fascinated by this huge organ in our body, the skin. So why don't we now segue into skin aging, what we know about it in terms of the research and what we can do to have better aging skin?
Yeah, the exciting thing is that we've got the tools available today to essentially stop our skin from aging, which is pretty awesome. So
that means no wrinkles, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So it's amazing what we can do nowadays. So I do want to clarify that all of this is in addition to diet, exercise, and sleep. So it's in addition to that baseline or foundation that we talked about. So one of the best things that we can do to minimize aging or even prevent aging of the skin is sunscreen. So there was quite a famous paper published in 2013. It was a 5-year study that divided patients into different groups. And one of the groups weren't using any sunscreen, and the other group were using sunscreen every day. And this involved just over 900 patients. And over a 5-year period, the group that were using sunscreen, there was no detectable increase in skin age. So essentially, just by using sunscreen, we can effectively stop our skin from aging. And that's just one strategy that we can use. Now, one of the concerns about using sunscreen every day is safety, because some of the sunscreen actually gets absorbed into our body, and it was thought that certain sunscreen ingredients can act as so-called endocrine disrupting chemicals, so getting in the way of our natural hormone levels such as testosterone. Overwhelmingly, that research has been overblown, and particularly nowadays we've got newer versions of those chemicals in our sunscreens that effectively don't get absorbed. So we can safely use a sunscreen every day to significantly make a dent in and how our skin ages, which is, yeah, pretty awesome.
Yeah, actually, I saw something really interesting on Twitter the other day, and I don't know if you've seen this, but I think there was a clip of Andrew Huberman stating in some podcast that he knows of a certain sunscreen or sunscreen as a whole that can actually cross the blood-brain barrier and affect different areas of your brain. And there's this researcher in Australia, actually, who researches skin health, and she's a PhD. She has a PhD in chemistry, and she was asking people, can somebody help me find this study because I don't think it exists. But that's what caught my attention. I'm like, oh, maybe there's you know, people out there saying wild things about sunscreens, which is, you know, scaring people, like you said.
I think you might be referring to Dr. Michelle Wong, who I recently
yes.
did a podcast with on my channel.
Yeah, oh, that's it, yes.
So she's a fantastic resource for discussing skin health. I recently did a podcast with her, and we broke down all of these myths around sunscreen. Overwhelmingly, it is unfortunate that people have this misconception that sunscreens do all these terrible things to the body, when actually they don't. There's no long-term research suggesting that, particularly with the newer newer ingredients that don't get absorbed. So we can, by using these sunscreens, we can effectively stop our skin from aging. I only wish that all of my patients that I saw at the clinic were using sunscreen every day, because it's not only skin aging that we're trying to prevent, but it's also skin cancers as well. And sunscreen can make a significant dent in that. The research is compelling. Over a 5-year period, there were no detectable signs of aging in the sunscreen group. And that's just one strategy out of many that we can use.
Okay, let's talk about this strategy that I've been using, which you and I spoke offline, and you changed my mind about it. So I have recently, just this year, 2023, I've started to put hyaluronic acid on my face. I got it. I went and had a facial, and this was like early January. And she said, oh my gosh, you have really dry skin. You need to be taking hyaluronic acid. I didn't really know too much about it. So I've been putting this serum on daily. And then, you know, you spoke to me about that. So why don't we segue into hyaluronic acid? And I'd love for you to tell us what that is specifically.
Yeah, so hyaluronic acid is part of the backbone of our connective tissue. So it holds everything together. And as we age, our levels of hyaluronic acid generally decline. So in our skin, for example, a 75-year-old person only has about 25% of the hyaluronic acid that a 25-year-old person has. So it's a significant decline, and that's one of the big reasons as to why we see the signs of aging. So when I first looked into the research about hyaluronic acid, I was incredibly skeptical, because hyaluronic acid by itself is a really long molecule. So it baffled me that if we took a hyaluronic acid supplement, that somehow our body could digest it and then transport it in our bloodstream and get it into our skin. That just made no sense to me. But lo and behold, we've got my studies showing that yes, actually, if you take hyaluronic acid supplements, it is absorbed into the skin, and it does improve the hyaluronic acid content in the skin. We've also got human research showing the same thing. And then we've got multiple randomized, double-blind placebo-controlled studies showing that, yes, if you do supplement with hyaluronic acid, you improve skin wrinkles, you improve elasticity and firmness of the skin. So personally, I use 200 milligrams of hyaluronic acid as a supplement. Now, one of the things that you've touched on is, should we be using skin serums that have got hyaluronic acid in them? Now, hyaluronic acid, when I had a look at the research about skin serums, it's not really absorbed through the skin into the deeper layers of the skin, because our skin replenishes itself quite quickly. So ideally, you want to have a treatment that is targeting the dermis, or the deeper layer of the skin, because if you make sure that layer is healthy, then the cells that are produced from the dermis are then pushed out, and that's eventually the cells that you see on the surface. What hyaluronic acid as a serum does, though, is hydrate the skin. So if your skin is quite dry and you want to have an option to hydrate the skin, then hyaluronic acid is an option. But over the long term, I'm not aware that hyaluronic acid serums actually help with skin aging per se, but it's the supplements that do.
Wow, that's so interesting. I'm going to have to pick up some hyaluronic acid supplements, or, and do both, because both may be the best. What else do we know about skin aging other than sun, hyaluronic acid, and obviously water. We know that good hydration is good for your skin, right?
Yeah, so one of the other things that has got a truckload of research that ideally everyone should be doing, aside from pregnant women, which we'll get into, is using a retinoid cream. So retinoid creams, yeah, they again, we've touched on the dermis, the deeper layer of the skin. So retinoid creams, they've been shown to improve our blood vessel health or the blood supply to the dermis, so it, improving the nutrition there. It also speeds up the turnover of the skin, so it just means that that, you know, that there's less wrinkles and things, and that's been proven over and over again in long-term studies going out at least 1 year, that if you use a retinoid cream, you reduce wrinkles, you reduce other signs of aging, and you improve the health of the dermis. So ideally, everyone should be using a retinoid cream. Now, when you first start using a retinoid cream, it can be a bit irritating to the skin. But once you get over that that initial phase where your skin's getting used to the retinoid cream that you apply at night, then you start to reap the benefits. Now, retinoid creams are high-dose vitamin A, and that's something that pregnant women should be avoiding. So that's the caveat that I just want to put here, is that if you're a woman of childbearing age and you're trying to have a child or you are pregnant, this is something that probably should be avoided. But outside of that, it's been shown to be very, very safe. High dose vitamin A, it causes issues with birth defects. So that's one of the big reasons as to why it needs to be avoided. For adults, it's absolutely fine. It doesn't cause anything like that. But it's just for the developing fetus, it's been known to cause issues. So, for example, if I see teenagers in the clinic, one of the things that we can sometimes prescribe for acne is high dose vitamin A. So it's called isotretinoin. And that, you have to give the spiel that if you get pregnant while you're on this medication, it's an absolute catastrophe. So you need to make sure that that those people are using adequate protection and that they understand the risks. But again, outside of that, it's been shown to be very, very safe, and it does significantly improve signs of aging. So that's another tool that we can use in our arsenal to help with skin aging. The one last thing that I just want to mention in terms of skin health, that's actually got some very good research behind it, is collagen peptides. So again, this was something that I was very skeptical when I first looked into the research, because collagen, just like hyaluronic acid, is a long molecule. So how could we possibly absorb these long molecules and get it into the skin to make a difference? But if you take collagen peptides, so those are chopped up collagen. So it's short chains that the body can actually absorb. And overwhelmingly, the research shows in humans to improve skin health. So in particular, there's a meta-analysis that pulled together all of the relevant double-blind placebo-controlled studies in humans. And it showed that all of them, so there were 10 studies included in that meta-analysis, all of them improved the signs of aging in terms of wrinkles, elasticity of the skin, firmness. So that's something else that I personally use, is 10 to 15 grams of collagen peptides every day. Once you're doing that, you can see why I'm so excited that effectively by using all four of those strategies, we can basically stop skin aging, which is awesome.
And guys, if you aren't watching this on YouTube and you haven't seen Brad's face, he does look like you look like you've got skin of a 15-year-old. So that's amazing. you're not 15.
Johnny, because I put sunscreen on it just as a habit. So I forgot to not put that on before this podcast. So apologies.
I just want to ask one question about collagen, because I get asked this a lot. There's different types out there. Where does it come from? Is there algae-based collagen?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different types of collagen. So in the body, I think there's like 47 different types of collagen. So there's a lot of confusion online as to which collagen we should be getting, because primarily in our skin, it's type 1 collagen. Remember that collagen in the body, it's long chains. It's long strands, right? But then collagen peptides are where those long strands are broken down. So actually, there's no evidence to suggest that that the different types of collagen actually matter, because again, that they're chopped up into smaller pieces. So effectively, the supplement that you're looking for, you just need to make sure that it's pure, doesn't have heavy metals in it, and then the original strands of collagen don't seem to matter. Once again, it's because they're chopped up into those smaller pieces. So I don't think we necessarily need to worry about the original type of collagen that the collagen peptides came from.
Okay, got it. I think that's the best skincare routine we can be having, those three things that you mentioned. Okay, so let's move on to long-term cognitive health and cognitive function.
Yeah, so most of this comes back to the foundation that we talked about. And I'm going to emphasize it because that's what actually makes a huge difference to our cognition. So diet, exercise, sleep, meditation, socializing, and life purpose. If everyone had those things sorted, there'd be massive reductions in dementia rates and Alzheimer's disease and in cognitive performance. But if we're looking for things that can go above and beyond that, there's actually some interesting research looking at creatine. So creatine supplements, I think virtually everyone should be taking, not only for the muscle performance benefits, but there was a meta-analysis published towards the end of last year suggesting that in older adults, there was a significant improvement in cognitive performance by using creatine supplements. And we've got research going out at least 5 years looking at the safety profile of creatine, and overwhelmingly it's been shown to be safe. So originally there was concerns about kidney health, and those concerns have been dispelled by these studies. So personally, I take 5 grams of creatine every day, and I think most people should be, and that includes on days that I don't work out as well. So that's one supplement that people certainly can consider to optimize their brain health. And one of the other things that it's still up in the air is omega-3. So there are some meta-analyses in humans suggesting that, yes, there are cognitive benefits. There are other meta-analyses suggesting that actually there aren't. What we do seem to know is that over the long term, so long as you're not mega-dosing omega-3, it does appear to be a safe supplement. Now, the caveat to that is that at higher dosages, omega-3 has been shown to increase the rates of atrial fibrillation. So that's a particular heart arrhythmia. So it's a very small increase, but there is still that harm. So I'm not a fan of taking more than, say, one capsule of omega-3 a day, because I think if you just take that smaller dose, you're going to lock in the potential benefits and minimize any of those harms. So that's another thing that people can do to improve their cognitive health.
A high dose would mean that like 10 grams a day? Because I know that there is a lot of studies that show that 4 grams a day, 2 grams of EPA, 2 grams of DHA is wonderful for the brain. So I'm thinking that anything above that, maybe what? Are you talking maybe 6, 7 to 10 grams a day?
I suppose it depends on the study that you're looking at. Again, if you look at the totality of research, there are, again, some studies that show, yes, there are significant benefits. Other studies saying, actually, there's not much to see here. So it depends on which studies that you're looking at. With the cardiovascular studies, when they looked at the 4 gram a day, that's where they saw the increases in atrial fibrillation. So I think, personally, I'd rather stay on the safer side and take a lower dose of omega-3. Because that's where I think you could probably lock in the benefits. I'd just be careful, because once again, if you look at the totality of research, it's not actually as exciting as what we had initially hoped.
So we're wrapping up now. What are some of the key takeaways from you that everybody should know?
Diet, exercise, sleep, meditation, life purpose. Socializing, those are the things that truly matter. And then on top of that, there are some things that we can do. So we touched on them for skin health, so I'll just rattle them off again. Sunscreen is a big one. That's probably the main one that people should be considering. Then it's retinoid creams. And then if you're looking at supplements, it's hyaluronic acid and collagen. If you're looking at other supplements that do seem to make a difference for human health, creatine is one of the big ones. Omega-3, there are probably benefits in terms of cognition and in terms of reducing cardiovascular disease. If you're looking at other factors that you can use to try and maximize your health and longevity, I think it's seeing a doctor regularly to check, you know, things like your cholesterol levels, your blood sugar levels. And then there's a bunch of different cancer screening programs that have got a lot of good human research behind them. So it's things like, you know, cervical smears, mammograms, prostate checks. You know, that there are there are new protocols around bowel cancer screening. So there's a lot that you can do today to maximize your health and longevity. And that's one of the reasons why I started my YouTube channel, to try and get that message out there, that there is so much that we can do nowadays. And if you've got the time, I think it's well worth investing in your health.
So where is your YouTube channel? Where can everybody find out more about you? Because I know that you're not on Instagram.
Yeah. I know. It's just the function of time. I just haven't managed to get onto Instagram yet. So if people wanted to find some of my content, YouTube is where I mostly publish. So my channel is just called Dr. Brad Stanfield. And I'm also found on Twitter as well. So every now and again, I'll find something interesting to tweet about, but it's primarily YouTube that I'm active.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brad, for being part of the Neuro Experience podcast.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to be here. Thanks for your time.